most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Hines with Vince Farrar. Our guest, Dr. Jerry Punch of ESPN, his appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. New Balance Knoxville carries everything from footwear in a wide range of size and widths to versatile offerings of apparel and accessories. So whether it's running, walking, or simply looking, a wide selection can help you reach your goals. New Balance Knoxville. Doc, I wanted to ask you about this. There had been a story that I read that said that one of the concerns about proceeding with football is that the virus can cause some heart damage called myocarditis. What do you know about that situation?
I know that's been a trip that some enlargement of the heart, cardiomyopathy, the muscular enlargement, has been a noted sequelae of several people, especially some of the athletes that have gotten the coronavirus. So they've had a large heart. I'm not sure the specific tie. I've seen it alluded to. I've not seen specific research that they can attribute directly the coronavirus to a myocarditis, inflammation of the heart muscle, or an enlargement of the heart after you recover. So I know that has been that information has been floated to a number of athletes who were looking at playing versus not playing or opting out, and saying you put yourself at risk for long-term cardiac issues, lung issues, but I'm not so sure that the specific connection has been made, although there have been several players. One, I think, defensive lineman in particular, who's been diagnosed with a cardiomyopathy following a bout of the COVID-19.
All right, Kevin Harvick over the weekend in Michigan. He sweeps the Saturday and Sunday races. What a great weekend for Kevin Harvick.
Yeah, absolutely. Kevin looked unbeatable both Saturday and Sunday. A doubleheader in the two-mile oval, D-shaped oval in Michigan, Motor City, in the backyard of the manufacturers for Ford Motor Company and General Motors. Obviously, it's about winning. It's a pride moment for winning, even though the fans weren't there. Normally, the folks from Ford Motor Company are there, although they weren't allowed there either because of restrictions on distancing. But Kevin Harvick, he started 20th on Sunday after winning on Saturday, drove directly to the front, did not win the first stage, but basically won five of the six stages in two races to dominate and get his fifth and sixth wins of the year. And that basically ties him with Rusty Wallace for 10th all-time on the NASCAR win list with 55 career victories. Harvick's done that in only three-plus seasons there, driving, for Stewart Haas Racing. And by the way, all six of Harvick's wins have come since they've gone back to racing, returned to action on May 17th this year. So, and with all due respect to Ernie Banks, who said, let's play two, I think Kevin Harvick and Victory Lane said, let's race three here, because he's already won two in a row at Michigan. He'd be happy to run one on Monday up there and win three in a row. And I believe he could, because he was almost untouchable.
Looks like Joe Gibbs Racing has parted ways with Eric Jones and will go with Christopher Bell, which, Doc, I think was expected.
Yeah, I mean, Eric Jones is a veteran driver who has won at Daytona. He won the Southern 500 at Darlington. This year he had not won. He had run well. 25-year-old from Michigan, experienced driver. A year ago at the end of the season, Joe Gibbs put his arm around him. Toyota said, we love you. Remember, you've got Denny Hamlin, who's won five times this year, Kyle Busch, who's yet to win, and you got Martin Truex Jr., who's won once at Martinsville. So three of the four, they were two. Eric Jones and Kyle Busch were two of the drivers that had not won there. And the question was with Christopher Bell, who was basically one in the farm group for Joe Gibbs Racing. He's a young driver that was driving for Levine Racing. And Levine announced this week that he is going to sell that team and close down at the end of the year. And so that means Christopher Bell would have been a free agent if someone doesn't grab him up. So Joe Gibbs says, okay, do we lose Christopher Bell, who's a rising star in the sport? Do we let him go somewhere else, or do we make room for him? We're only allowed to have four teams, and so that was a very difficult decision for Joe Gibbs, and he made it and told Eric Jones on the Friday afternoon of this week that we're not going to be here next year. Eric Jones said, I was blindsided, to quote him. Didn't expect that to happen. And Christopher Bell has now been signed to drive the 20 car in 2021. And Bell will become the, I think, fifth different driver to get in and drive that car. Tony Stewart, Joey Logano, Matt Kenseth, Eric Jones, and now Christopher Bell, who's from Norman, Oklahoma, and has won about everything he sat in going back to the early years of the Chili Bowl, Eldora. He was an open wheel champion. His upbringing is very much like Tony Stewart. Kid's a winner no matter where he goes. So I guess Toyota and Joe Gibbs couldn't afford to let Christopher Bell go and had to make the tough decision to let Eric Jones leave and bring Bell in for next year.
Let's go to the phones where Reed is our next caller. Reed, you're on with Doc Punch.
Hey, Doc. How are you guys doing today?
Doing well, thank
good,
you.
Good, good. Reed, how are you?
I'm doing just fine. I've got a question about sponsorship. I was noticing in the race yesterday that J.J. Yeley did not have any type of sponsorship on his car. How can these guys afford to race like that?
Well, what happens, Reed's a great question. What happens is the owners of some of those cars basically get money. If you enter the race and you run toward the end, you can get $50,000-$60,000, and if you you don't have to pay buy but a few sets of tires, now you don't have to practice and qualify, and you give the driver you may pay him $10,000-$20,000 to start the car. You can walk away and you don't wreck the car. You can walk away with $10,000-$15,000 in your pocket. It's a roll of the dice. You don't go there to win. You go there to start the race, fill out the field, and run as long as you can, as safely as you can, and not to hurt your engine and not to hurt your car. If you tear up the car or you blow the engine, you lose money. Otherwise, you can make it and make a little bit of money if you're very careful. Now, you're not going to be competitive, and you're basically got to be very careful not to get in the way, but that's how you do it.
So basically, they're just letting these other cars that don't have sponsorship and do not have a lot of money to fill up the field. Is that what I'm seeing?
Well, that's one way to look at it, but in all fairness to some of these owners that have these cars, and I know some of these guys and they're friends of mine, you know, they don't have the sponsorship, not because they're not out here looking, and they firmly believe if they can race a year or so and put $20,000 in the bank after every race, and maybe every five or six races, they can rent a better engine, buy more tires, and go for it. Maybe they'll say, like, okay, we get to Martinsville or we get to this track or that track. My driver's really good there. We can get a top 20 finish. We're going to go ahead and roll the dice and put all our eggs in this basket, and then we're going to have to just to race the next four races to make sure we put some money in the bank, and then we can do it again. They're trying to get there. They're not trying to come in and just steal money and put it in the bank and walk away. I think they're really trying to build their own team, but this is the way they have to do it.
Who is the owner of the J.J. Yeley car?
I'm not sure if that's a – Derek Cope owns one of the cars, the former Daytona 500 winner, I don't know which one that is. There's several different guys that own the – Phil Parsons has owned a couple of those. Derek Cope has owned a couple of those. And, you know, they've told me that – let me think, who else? The guy that was the – I'm blanking on his name. He ran a couple of cars in the Xfinity Series for a long time. Didn't have a lot of sponsorship, but they were there every week and ran, and occasionally ran pretty well. But that's what he told me. So we put enough money in the bank that we could run 1 week. He said, who knows, if we can just get notice, maybe we can get a little sponsorship. And people can jump on our car and get their name on the entire side of the car for a fourth or a fifth of what it would cost to put them on a top 10 car.
All right, Doc. I appreciate your answer. You have a great week, and be safe.
Thank you, Reed. Thanks for calling.
Doc, I wanted to ask you in terms of the competitive balance between Toyota, Fords, Chevys. What do you think about the way they've all competed? They all have representative in the top 10 in the points race, but what about that competitive balances with those three?
Well, I think Toyota dominated the season last year and with the most wins by far, then Ford, then Chevy was just struggling to be competitive week in, week out. Chevrolet made a change with the body style of the Camaro. This Camaro is much more, to use the terms they use, it's much more balanced in terms of aerodynamics. The engines are still good, but, you know, they still struggle to be able to get to victory lane on non-restrictor plate or non-trackside Daytona Talladega, where it's a big tapered spacer and a certain package for drafting. I think Toyota on certain tracks still has the overall balance package. I think Ford is really stout in the engine program. The Roush Yates engines, if you watch what Kevin Harvick's done the last few weeks, the joke in racing is Harvick handles really well on the straightaway, meaning all he does is push the right foot down on the throttle, and he handles so well because he's only going straight. But that horsepower is there. He just blows by people, as do some of the other Fords. So I think Ford has the horsepower, and they're really close on the balance with this Mustang, last year being the first year they ran the Mustang. And then Toyota probably is overall has the best balance front and back with their Camry, and maybe they're a close second in horsepower. And I think Chevy is still third, but they've certainly made strides this year over what they were a year ago.
Doc, I just saw this. Donde Plowman at UT tweeted some photos, and she said, "This afternoon, I met with our football team and staff to have an open conversation about playing football this fall. At the end of our discussion, I asked if they wanted to play football, and the answer was a resounding yes." She said, "This group of student athletes have worked hard to prepare for the season amidst detailed and strict health and safety protocols. I can't wait to see them on the field in Neyland Stadium." Something similar happened at Wake Forest, where their president talked to the players at practice today. What's your reaction to that?
I think that's leadership. I think that's what I commented about, the leadership or lack thereof we're seeing in maybe the Big Ten with some of the disconnect that the presidents up there have. I don't know, and I'm not throwing stones at the Big Ten schools as a whole. I think that in Iowa and Nebraska, maybe at Ohio State, maybe at Michigan, there's communication, but it sounds like there's a disconnect between the coaches and the president's offices at Michigan and Ohio State, especially if those presidents vote against college football. But I think the President Plowman, Chancellor Plowman, I think that goes to show you that she wants to lead from the top, and she doesn't want to just, even though she probably has the utmost respect, and why wouldn't she, of the opinion of Philip Fulmer, she wants to hear it directly from the players. And if I'm Philip Fulmer, I want those players sitting in front of the president of the university or the chancellor saying, okay, let's hear what you have to say, and from the players themselves. And I think that's fabulous. I think the same thing with some of the other schools that have spoken up, and I think that's exactly what leadership should be. That's why I'm so proud of what Greg Sankey did today by saying, amidst all the people trying to make decisions on having college football or not having college football here on August 10th, you know, he says, be patient. One thing I've learned in the coronavirus is be patient. We're going to try to make this system work, and we firmly believe that as time evolves, that we have a system to keep our players and our students safe and maybe be able to move ahead. You know, that's why we've moved everything back. You know, we're not in a crunch to do a knee-jerk reaction and make a decision. So I like hearing that. And I think that's a great statement by the leadership at the University of Tennessee to be able for her to meet with those players and say, tell me how you think, what you want to do, so I sort of know where you're coming from. I think that's wonderful. That's definitely leadership with a capital L.
That's Dr. Jerry Punch from ESPN. His appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville, which carries everything from footwear to apparel to accessories. If you want to join us, 656-9900. With Vince Ferrar, I'm Jimmy Hamm. Sports Talk 99.1, the Sports Animal.
Tell the truth. Isn't this better than hearing Boston's More Than a Feeling for the 10,000th time? 99.1, the Sports Animal.
Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Hines with Vince Ferrar. Our guest, Dr. Jerry Punch of ESPN, brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. Let's go to the phones where Anthony is our next caller. Hello, Anthony.
Hello, how are you? Hello.
Good, how are you?
I'm doing great. I just wanted to call in and share a little uplifting story related to NASCAR. I am a member and a moderator in a mullet group on Facebook. And one of our members, Keith McGee, is the first ever disabled veteran to race a NASCAR race. And that was his dream growing up. I think he's raced maybe four races in the truck series. And he kind of ran out of funds. So our group has got about 50,000 members. We all pulled together and we're trying to get him sponsorship down in Talladega this year in October, and if so, it will be the first time a driver has made it to a race through sponsorship through a social media site.
Wow, that's fabulous. Keith McGee's his name, is that right?
Yes, sir. It's Keith McGee. He's from Alaska, and he's also the first Alaskan driver to race NASCAR. He got his start on a indoor go-kart track in Alaska.
Right.
And some he held a bunch of records. Nobody could beat him. And then somebody said, hey, you want to drive a stock car?
Wow. Now he says he's a disabled veteran. Does he use like a hand control? What's his disability?
He had a traumatic brain injury. I think in 2005, he suffered a traumatic brain injury in Iraq.
Okay. All right. Well, he raced. Where was his start? You say he's already made one start in NASCAR in the truck series?
He had two top 10 finishes back to back last year. I'd have to look up to tell you exactly what tracks they were, but he's raced a total of four races, and we're looking to try to get him down to Talladega this year. And the mullet group, which I know is kind of an odd thing, but it's kind of a brotherhood, and everybody in there is wanting to support this guy and help him achieve his dreams. And we are currently shooting a mullet-themed calendar, and I'm going to go up to the NASCAR Speed Park this week, and I'm going to do a Dale Earnhardt-themed shoot for March number 3.
Good for you. What a great group. Well, that's fabulous. I appreciate you letting us know that. I will look that up and see if I can't find out from some of the folks at NASCAR. I'll be over in Charlotte this week at NASCAR. Okay. See if I can pass that along. Let them look up a little bit more about Keith McGee.
Yeah. The name of the group that is trying to sponsor Keith is called The Mullet That Changed My Life on Facebook.
Okay. The Mullet That Changed My Life. All right.
Yeah, check out The Mullet That Changed My Life on Facebook, and you'll see all the details on there.
Anthony, that's fabulous. Thank you for calling and letting us know. We appreciate that.
Thank you. All right, from Anthony, let's go to Jerry. Jerry, you're on with Doc Punch.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Hey, Jerry. Hey, Doc, I got in on a conversation sometime last week. I think it was concerning Bubba Wallace and talking about all the different opportunities that he's got for next year, options or whatever. And then I've heard that Richard had offered him, I think, ownership, part ownership in the team or something. But that's all well and good, if it is. But I just noticed the last several races, that car's had Victory Junction on it, which I'm assuming that, you know, Adam Petty, that's a tax-free organization that they wouldn't need a tax write-off. So if Bubba's that hot a property and driving for Richard Petty, for Pete's sake, well, having that on, that just leads me to believe, I don't know for sure, but it just leads me to believe they didn't have sponsors for those races, so... as I say, if he's that hot and driving for Richard Petty, I would think they have sponsors lined up. So what do you think's going on with that team?
Yeah, I think a lot of that has to do with the schedules and the contracts they had early in the year. They probably didn't have sponsors for certain races, and they agreed to put Victory Junction Gang on there to help out that camp that was named after Adam Petty, you know, Richard's grandson. And also, I think the team itself, you know, has struggled financially. And if I'm not mistaken, Bubba mentioned yesterday on the telecast that he already has a very small ownership percentage that was given to him with that team back in 2019. But what he's been offered by Andrew Murstein, who's the co-owner of Richard Petty, Murstein's an investment banker in New York, an investment businessman in New York, he's been offered a significant, whatever that means number-wise, ownership stake in that team if he stays. Now, it's also reported he's also been offered, may be offered a ride for Chip Ganassi Racing in the 42 car that Kyle Larson was booted from early in the year with a possible McDonald's, the fast food chain sponsorship. And there are some other things that apparently are in the book, in the works as well. But I think it's very difficult to get those contracts signed and get that money, those monies on those cars right away. They're looking at, because of how the corporate structure works, I think they're probably months away, and that's probably why you saw the Victory Junction Gang camp on the Petty car. In fact, there are even Hendrick cars that have Hendrick his dealership situations on the car that don't have full sponsorships at some racetracks. That's just sort of the nature of where the sport was 6 or 8 months ago, and it's basically contracts for some of these races they're going through right now.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for the answer there. But like I say, most of these sponsors, about all they're getting is out of these things, I think is tax write off. I can't believe it. Most of them, they don't even know who they are. I don't know who they are or what they are. I guess apparently somebody does, but they don't seem to be that much in or so. The branding on the car is so small. I don't, can you even tell what. Who the sponsor is. So, but anyway, guys, I know you're about out of time here, so thanks for taking my call.
All right, we appreciate it, Doc. Just a little bit of time left, but Indy 500 is going to race without fans, correct?
Yep, Roger Penske wanted to run it with fans and vowed to do that, and even with the spike in the coronavirus, he went from 100% to 50% and agreed to go down to 25% with very strict protocols on face masks, shields, et cetera, et cetera. The local hospital there, IU Indiana, in Indianapolis, IU Health Center, said no. They wanted it to be without fans. Very difficult decision by Roger Penske, considering the fact that that track has, since World War II, has not missed a race, with the exception of the World War itself back in the early 40s. But he had no choice. Here are his two choices. You can hemorrhage money by running the race by running a race with no fans, meaning that you don't get ticket parking, you don't get concessions, you don't sell tickets, so you just pay everybody to work there and pay the purse, or you hemorrhage race teams by not having the race, because there's probably at least four or five teams, including the AJ Foyt's team and others, that said if they didn't run the Indy 500, which is what their sponsorship that they booked for the season was based on, because of the exposure that race gets worldwide, if they don't run that race, they don't keep their doors open. So he has to run the race, even with no fans. He has no choice, even though he's going to lose a sizable amount of money. Now, he reduced the purse from $15 million to $7.5 million because of no fans. But still, they're going to run it and do the best they can. But it's sort of sad that this was the case. I mean, they said in Marion County, Indiana, the COVID coronavirus cases have tripled in the last month and a half or so, and so he was just trying to abide by and as best he could the best wishes of the local medical center.
Doc, we appreciate it. Always great to catch up with you. We look forward to visiting with you again next week.
We'll talk next week, guys. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Doc.
Thanks, Doc.
Dr. Jerry Punch of ESPN, his appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. When we come back, Ron Higgins of Tiger Rag will join us. With Vince Ferrar, I'm Jimmy Himes, Sports Talk 99.1, The Sports Animal.
I'm VFL Charles Davis, and it's
47 days until
it's football time in Tennessee.
This Sports Radio WNML countdown to kickoff is brought to you by Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. Find out more at tvacreditunion.com.
Go on!
Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes along with Vince Farrar. Pleased now to be joined by a longtime friend of the program, longtime friend. We've known each other many, many years. That's Ron Higgins with Tiger Rag in Baton Rouge. Ron, how are you?
Many, many years means I'm exceptionally old.
Mature. Mature.
Yeah, nice of you.
Hope you and everybody's doing safe in Louisiana. I know Louisiana's been hit pretty hard by COVID-19.
Yeah, I mean, it has, but I think the governor here has done a pretty good job, and everybody finally got the idea that to mask and wear masks and everything. It's pretty unique watching public service announcements from the lieutenant governor urging anybody having a crawfish boil to wear, you know, masks. So, only Louisiana.
Ron, a lot of the speculation about whether the Big Ten is going to play, there have been reports they're not. The Pac-12 might follow suit. If those two elect not to play, do you think the SEC would go forward and play football this fall?
Absolutely. I think the SEC might play by themselves, honestly. It's like, to them, it's like, you know, what we've you can do what you want to do, but we're going to do what we're going to do. You know, it's I just think the SEC is at the point of they feel like they're looking at this thing. They set their schedule up to where they would start later. They've taken every precaution. And I think, you know, the we want to play movement by players is picking up momentum. And honestly, I think teams should put it up to a vote. I mean, if they want to play or not, you know, and anybody who doesn't want to play, I mean, they can opt out, and that's right. But I think, it might come to the point where let's have a team vote here. And if you want to play, if you want to call your parents or your guardians and consult with them before you vote, do that. But I think it might get to that point.
Do you think that that the SEC has, and they've been criticized for not making decisions quicker, but the SEC season is expected to start September 26th, the Big Ten September the 3rd. Do you agree with the commissioner's message, be patient, don't have to make a decision now, we'll wait until we have to decide? Do you agree with that?
I think this is kind of like, this is characteristic of the SEC. They, no matter who's the commissioner, whether it's, you know, Sankey or the late Mike Clive or Roy Kramer, they're very patient and thorough, and they look at every possible thing, and they're going to take their own sweet time before they, you know, come up with their decision. It's kind of like the way that historically it's always been. And again, they set their season up to start later, so therefore they do have a little more time.
Ron, with all the reports and discussions about the Big Ten possibly shutting things down, in your opinion, what does that come down to? Safety, litigation, amateurism, all of the above? How do you divide that pie up and why they would do that?
I think it's all the above. I mean, and also, I guess, public perception, I guess. But you see, you know, Ohio State wants to play. Michigan wants to play. Nebraska wants to play in that league. I think it's kind of – I think if you put it to a vote of athletic directors and coaches, it probably would have gone the other way. I think presidents are worried about perception more than anything else. And, again, everybody just assumed if the Big 10 is gone or go that way, the Pac-12 will, and everybody else will follow. Well, that's not necessarily true. I think we know at this point the Big Ten has made decisions and kind of gone out on the island, and the SEC's kind of said, okay, well, you know, you can make that decision first, and then we'll figure it out.
Nick Saban talked about it a little bit today, and I've heard other – Trevor Lawrence alluded to it as well, that players are safer on campus in their facilities than they would be at home. Do you feel that way?
Yeah, I do. And it's also this, every time a player lines up to hit somebody, he's probably safer you know, dodging COVID than he is getting paralyzed every play. You know, football players pretty much know the risk. They know the risk of playing football. And they know that they could get hurt on any play and seriously hurt on any play, and they still accept that risk. And I think they look at this the same way. And that meant that they believe I could get hurt, you know, worse than this. I could be in a wheelchair the rest of my life. And I mean, I understand that. And because I understand that, I understand I can accept this COVID risk. That's why I think that these football players want to play, because they get the risk. They understand that it could be heart problems or whatever. But they also, you know, they play with the risk of CTE too. So I think the players understand what's going on.
I guess Ron Higgins, Tiger Rag in Baton Rouge. Ron, in regard to some of the player demands we've seen from some conferences, one of them indicated that they would like to have insurance for 6 years after they play college football. And I wonder if that's reasonable, because I guess if you're going to go that route, you have to prove that that person contracted COVID-19 while in college playing football. But do you think it would be feasible or likely that colleges should pay for insurance for football players 6 years after they have completed their eligibility?
I'd love insurance 6 years after every job I got fired from. I mean, that group of players, honestly, is the smoking weed, man. I mean, they're definitely insane. They wanted 50% of revenue, too, also. Really? Mm-hmm. I mean, how does understand, you know, the university makes millions, but don't they think they spend some of those millions on you by your scholarship and your food and your board and everything they put into getting you through school and however long you get through it? It amazes me. And all the ones that threaten to walk, well, you know, then walk. They're gonna find out real quick in life that anybody is replaceable. Doesn't matter how good you are, you're replaceable. And so if you think you're good, you're walking, a football player, there are thousands behind you who want that scholarship. So if you want to take your principles and, you know, go work the graveyard shift somewhere because you think about, well, maybe I should have stayed in school and I shouldn't have done that. Well, all I can say is all the demands they're going to make, and I read national columnists, and they're saying this, the players are finding their voice now. Well, I mean, they're finding their voice, and honestly, you know, I think players probably should get endorsement money if they can make it. But as far as paying players and half revenues, they're out of their minds.
Why are they out of their minds? Why do you feel like that it's just not feasible to do it?
Not feasible to do it, and plus, I mean, they don't deserve half revenue. They don't understand how. I mean, then this is football players. So then you've got to pay every athlete you got on your payroll, every sport. And if you're going to do that, I mean, it's going to be a lower figure. You know, if you're going to pay every athlete in every sport in a lower figure, that's fine. But to think that, you know, I understand football carries the load of revenue. That's pretty much out there. Everybody knows that. But the fact that they think that, like, they're bulletproof, and the fact that they're threatening, like, you know, we're just going to walk at any moment. Well, then walk, because there's other people who want to take your place. And honestly, that's a lesson they can learn now, or learn when they're 40 or 50 years old, or whatever. When you think you're, no matter how good you think you are, they'll just find somebody else.
Well, speaking of finding somebody else, so if all the Power 5 conferences shut down, including the SEC, would Ed Orgeron find somebody to play in a parking lot, you think?
Well, you know, he's thinking about boxing. You know that, don't you?
Yes, I saw that.
You know, so I'm going to heavyweight circuit for about 3 or 4 months. I'll be fighting in gumbo bars along the bayou. But yeah, I mean, he wants to play. I think at this point, you know, coaches want to play, players want to play. You know, I know the rest of the country thinks the SEC is probably crazy, and in this case, the SEC does mean more if it plays. and almost anybody else does. But at this point, I really do think they should put this in the hands of players and let them vote on it. It's they're the ones at risk. It's up to them. It should be their decision at this point.
Ron, how has testing gone at LSU? I know Jim Harbaugh put out a bunch of stats. I don't expect you to regurgitate stats like that for LSU because there's a lot of them. But in general, how has that testing gone for the players at LSU's campus?
I think it's gone pretty well. They had a lot of positive tests early because a lot of those players went to a campus bar when they got back, which was a really smart thing to do. But since then, it's been pretty much the numbers have gone down. One player was extremely sick and lost a lot of weight. But they've been pleased so far with the testing numbers and the measures take. I think that's why the SEC feels like it can play because it has these standard measures in place and everybody's doing the same thing health-wise to make sure these players are as safe as possible. And that's why they say you feel like they're safer at school than at home. And the heartbreaking thing is when you read some of the tweets, some of these players, and they say, they don't want to go home because there's nothing there. There's nothing there for them. I mean, this is their life. This is where they get the best food. This is where they get medical help that they know they can afford, or they get medical help because the school gets it for them. They go home, that's not there. And you read some of the tweets, it really hits home that a lot of these guys come from backgrounds where they go home, they know there's nothing there for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ron, on the schedule real quick, LSU had Missouri and Vanderbilt added. They were combined 9-15 last year. LSU already had one of the easier schedules in the conference. They now have a combined SEC 2019 win total for their opponents of 33-47. Overall record of all their opponents in 2019, 64-61. Both of those are last easiest in the SEC. Was this the league taking care of the top couple teams in each division? What'd you think of those additions for LSU?
That's what 15-0 gets you right there. 15-0 gets you that. I mean, beating 8 ranked teams a year ago gets you 15-0 gets you that. Gets you that enormous street cred that only Alabama has gotten before. And it's pretty obvious. I mean, at the top of the conference, the teams at the top of each division got really good schedules, and it kind of filtered back down to where the Vanderbilts and the Missouris of the world just got killed. Arkansas got killed. That's the only way I can see that they weighted it. I mean, really, they looked at last year's records and just kind of went from there.
Yep. Hey, Ron, always great to catch up with you. Thank you for joining us. Hope that you and your family remain safe. Hope everything's going okay in Louisiana, and hopefully we'll have some college football this fall.
I hope so. Take care, guys. We'll see you.
Okay. Thanks, Ron.
See you, Ron.
That's Ron Higgins with Tiger Rag in Baton Rouge. When we come back, we'll have more. By the way, Rob Lewis is not going to be able to join us. He just had a conflict that just crept up, so we will not have him. But we will continue to take your phone calls and bring you some news at the top of the hour. With Vince Ferrar, I'm Jimmy Himes, Sports Talk, 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Nice. If it weren't for sports, we'd be forced to play that crap other stations play. Anybody need that? Nobody. 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes with Vince Ferrar. Always great to catch up with Ron Higgins. Hey, Vince, Tennessee has lost a player. Kaysom Hill apparently transferring from Tennessee. There have been a couple of reports out there about that. He was a walk-on that came in. I guess that's probably not a surprise. And he doesn't count against the 85 limit because he's not on scholarship. So it looks like Hill leaving the University of Tennessee.
Yeah, five scholarship quarterbacks in front of him. I don't know that he was going to be much of a factor anyway, especially considering the experience and four scholarship quarterbacks, because it looks like there's already been a movement of Jimmy Holiday moving a wide receiver. but that's a lot in front of him. Didn't look like he was going to be a factor, so not surprised by that really at all, especially if he didn't want to move to another position.
Yeah, I wasn't sure why he came here in the first place. But anyway, we'll see where he ends up. When we come back, we got a lot more college football talk. We'll also have some conversation about the SEC scheduling that's out there, and then a couple of other notes in regard to the NBA. With Vince Ferrar, I'm Jimmy Himes. Sports Talk 99.1, the Sports Animal.